Welcome to Adventures of a Blonde Geisha.
Hello, everyone. It's been almost a month that I have not been doing my podcast, and I'm so glad to be back. Welcome to Adventures of a Blonde Geisha. My name is Liesl, and I am hosting this podcast. Guys, it's just been way too hot. I think I probably mentioned in one of my first episodes, but my quote-unquote podcast studio is also my closet in my bedroom, and it gets pretty doggone hot during the summer. I was not having it. So I took a break, you know. I've been doing it now for 6 months, and I figured that it'd be good to take just a little breather. Plus work was pretty busy. I was traveling quite a bit with work. But I'm happy to be back. I'm happy, happy, happy. I hope that you have been enjoying your summer vacation. Boy, it's been a hot one though. I mean, everyone I talk to, it's either been, you know, record temperatures, or there's also been record rain in places, not here in California, that's for sure. But there's been flooding. There's just been, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It's a crazy, crazy world. But, you know, when you have a crazy world, when you have a crazy life, when you are crazy, which I think I am sometimes, I know I am sometimes, it's always good to have something to kind of keep you even keeled and to really help soothe you and soothe your soul. And for me, I feel like my whole life, it's all been about the music, which is why this episode is called Mo Music, Mo Life. You know, it's kind of course, taken after the Tower Records phrase that they had for a really long time. No music, no life, which kind of the same thing, but, you know, wanted to switch it up a little bit. I wanted to give you some insight into my journey with music, some of the experiences that I've had, some of the influences that I have, and, you know, just pay a little tribute as well. One of my favorite singer-songwriter, I guess she would be considered, when I was growing up, when I was really little, was Olivia Newton-John, rest in peace. Absolutely loved her. I never heard of her until I remember going to a supermarket, you know, it was kind of like a Target or a Kmart, a Walmart, that kind of thing in Japan. It was called Ito-Yokado. And I remember going with my dad because I wanted him to buy the ABBA cassette tape. Yes, this is when cassette tapes were still around. And, you know, I was trying to negotiate. I was like, Dad, I'll do dishes. Like I was, you know, working really hard to negotiate a deal so he would buy that and I could walk away with my own ABBA cassette, greatest hits cassette tape. However, it was a pretty easy negotiation. My dad told me that, yeah, sure, I'll buy you this ABBA Greatest Hits. However, I will also buy you this Greatest Hits. And I'm like, what? Olivia Newton-John? I've never heard of this person before. But apparently, you know, my dad thought that she was really hot. So he wanted to buy it for me, he says. But then, you know, be able to listen to it. But really what ended up happening is I took it home and I listened to it and I loved it. It was, on that Greatest Hits. And I still remember the cover too. I think that was the first time that I ever heard Jolene, 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 Jolene. Such a great song. Of course, Dolly Parton's song. But that was the first version I ever heard. Or, Have You Ever Been Lonely? That song, loved it, loved it, loved it. Yep, no, I do not sound like Olivia Newton-John. I'm quite aware of that fact. But she just, to me, was such a breath of fresh air. So much pureness and sweetness to her voice. It was such a beautiful voice. I really, really loved her. And then, of course, you know, she came out with a Big Bang and the Grease musical, which blew me away. I had never seen a musical before. I probably had, I just didn't know. But this is really the first time when I saw music and theater work so well in a movie theater. And I was just in love with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. I thought for sure they were going to get married and they were dating in real life. It was a really, really big influence on me. I bought the album. And, you know, that was just a period in my life where, yes, Olivia Newton-John. So I'm very, very sad that she's no longer with us, but the music obviously is timeless. For those of you that don't really know very much about Olivia Newton-John's music, you might know some of her big hits like Let's Get Physical, you know, the big hit from the 80s. Grew up with that, totally know that song as well, but that definitely doesn't do her justice. She's just got so many great hits. And from what I understand, she seemed like a really amazing woman. I would have loved to interview her. I've interviewed so many people, and she was on that list of classic, incredible icons that I would have loved to interview. But anyway, another artist or a singer, I guess, that really just, oh my gosh, I was so smitten with him, was Andy Gibb. And I remember when I first saw his single Shadow Dancing, and it was on Japanese TV. I think I might have even mentioned this. I don't know. But he was on TV performing, and he had on these tight, super fit jeans, and he was wearing snake boots. And I thought, what? Who is this man in these snakeskin boots? I was just in love. I thought for sure I would marry him. That, of course, led to me learning a lot about his brothers, the Bee Gees, who to this day are one of my favorite groups. I think they're just so talented. Another very iconic singer-songwriter who's had a huge influence on me would be Billy Joel. You know, 52nd Street, that was my first album I ever bought from him. And I listened to that on the family stereo for, oh my gosh, hours, I think. He to me was very fascinating because having grown up in Japan most of my life and not really knowing very much about America, and he was this whole New York, a little bit bad boy, you know, like underground grungy singer-songwriter, you know, singing on, you know, like banging away at a piano while he's, you know, smoking on a cigarette. Like that whole vibe to me, was just so foreign, right? And so I was like, oh, wow. So this is what clubs are like in America. But I just loved him, and I love that album. Donna Summer would be another one. And I still remember the first time I got the Donna Summer on the radio 1 and 2. Those were huge albums for me. Well, it was like a double CD or not double CD, a double album record. And I remember we went to Taiwan. I think this was for Christmas or right before Christmas, something like that. And I told my mom and dad that I wanted music. And of course, you know, in Taiwan, we were able to find bootlegs. And one of the ones we got was Donna Summer on the radio, volume 1 and 2. So I took it home. I listened to it all the time. To this day, you know, I still absolutely love her voice. And I think she's just a singing goddess, really, really amazing voice. So another influence for me, I know I've talked about my radio days and I've talked about getting into radio, but FEN, Far East Network, which was really the only American style radio and even music I had access to growing up in Japan. And I would listen to FEN pretty religiously. I didn't listen to all the shows. However, there were shows that I would try to never miss. One was Wolfman Jack. He would come on at night. And, you know, a lot of times it was right before my bedtime or it was when I was supposed to be studying. So I would sneakily go into my parents' room, get one of their cassette tapes that, of course, you know, were actually reserved for church where they were going to tape the pastor's sermon or whatnot. But, you know, I thought my mission was a lot more noble and a lot more important. So I would take their cassette tapes and I would go into my room and then with my little cassette recorder, I would record Wolfman Jack. And he just, a lot of the songs and the artists that came on his show, I'd never heard before. And so I was just a sponge learning. But of course, for me, the most influential radio show, bar none, would be Casey Kasem and his Countdown show, which he did, I believe it was on Sunday. And it would start, I think, right around 12 o'clock at noon, if I'm not mistaken, which was really a bum for me because that was when I was supposed to be in church with my parents. So I would always try to get home as early as possible so that I could start recording the Countdown. And the luxury of this would be if I was listening to it and recording it at the same time. I still have these flashbacks to me with this little, you know, tape recorder and hearing Kenny Rogers for the first time with The Gambler, or hearing Linda Ronstadt for the first time, Lionel Richie and the Commodores. There were so many artists that I was introduced to through Casey Kasem. It really was my Bible, you know, and one of the most impactful artists that I learned about on Casey Kasem was Prince, who, if you know me, you know that I absolutely love Prince so much. But I just remember, you know, Prince coming on the top 40. And I even remember where I was. My family and I had gone bowling after church. And, you know, of course, this means that I missed some of the Countdown. So I was not happy about it. So, but we're finished bowling. And so I'm like, oh, okay, I need to rush out really quick. And so I went to the car and I turned on FEN. And, you know, then I heard Casey Kasem talk about this ingenue, this incredible young guy, you know, who was not only singing and writing and producing, he also played his own instruments. And I was just completely blown away. And then, you know, he played I Want to Be Your Lover by Prince. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in love. This is the best thing ever. I do have a very interesting story that I will bring up later on in a different podcast episode. And it will be completely dedicated to Prince and my interesting, not relationship, because obviously, you know, Prince, I don't have a relationship, but there's kind of this, I've had some interesting connections and to Prince. And so I want to talk about that in a different episode, but it is where I first discovered Prince. Then I moved to the States, you know, that one time. Not the time when I was in the States in fourth grade, where it was Austin, Texas. This is another time when I was there in South Carolina, in Columbia, South Carolina. And a lot of my friends were listening to Rick James. So that's when I discovered funk and soul. And through that, I also discovered some of my favorites like Gap Band, Charlie Wilson, who I will also say to this day, Charlie Wilson is one of my favorite voices and entertainers ever, bar none. I absolutely love him. But I also love Rick James. And kind of interesting, I'm just going to put this out there, though, just because, you know, Prince is my guy. But apparently I saw a documentary not too long ago about Rick James. It's really fascinating. He is not just the give it to me, baby, you know, that kind of like disco. I don't even know what people think of him, but you know, we kind of do think of him as being like this, you know, amazing disco singer artist or whatever, but he actually has so much more depth to him. And it's really interesting to, you know, listen to or hear about his history and how he got started. But apparently Prince opened for Rick James. It was one of the first times when he was first getting started off, he opened for Rick James, and it was by, you know, when Prince would do his thing and then Rick James would come on. And obviously Rick James is Rick James, you know, just an amazing performer. So apparently Prince would sit there and he would study Rick James really hard. And he would, you know, write notes down about how he wanted to do things and how Rick James was with the, you know, with the audience and how he was on the stage. And so, and I didn't know this, you know, I always thought that Prince was very influenced by James Brown. And I'm sure there's a lot of that, but a lot of it is also apparently Rick James. So there you go. He is a badass. But yeah, so Charlie Wilson, and then in the high school, you know, days, I was listening to all the 80s music because that was the peak of 80s music, everything and anything, whether it be Culture Club, Cyndi Lauper, oh, Wham! I loved Wham! And, you know, we in Japan, it was really a big thing for us to wear jeans jackets. And on the jeans jacket, you would have like these little pins that you would put on the jacket. I had Culture Club. I had George Michael. I would always have Madonna on there as well, right? And that was kind of, you know, my thing. That's what I did back then when I was in high school too. And this was really a little bit later on, I would say my junior, senior year. I was kind of that girl where I was a Madonna wannabe. Yes, I was. I remember, and this is kind of a crazy only in Japan story, but my senior year in high school, Japanese TV was bringing out the lookalike for Madonna, for Michael Jackson, and I don't remember who else. There were like a few of them. And they needed a place to have these lookalikes interact with gaijin or, you know, foreign people or whatever. And so they actually came to our school. And I was so excited. I decided that I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a Madonna wannabe. So I want to definitely take a picture with the Madonna lookalike. And I did. And it made my day and made my year. And it was really wonderful. But yeah, that's a really good memory. Kind of, you know, bizarre. But and then after high school, you know, when I started working in radio, of course, I was surrounded by music. And that kind of gave me a lot of music education, you know. I remember that one of the first times that I was working at J-Wave, the radio station I was working at, and someone came up to me and they're like, you know, this is for the morning show, right? So it's really in the morning, not that many people there, but someone came up to me like, Liesl, so who would you say you like better? Do you like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones? And I was like, actually, I don't think I like it, either of them. I'm not a big fan. And everyone turned around. They're like, what? What do you mean you don't like the Beatles? You know, it was, yeah, you know. And I say, hey, it is what it is. Not a fan. It is what it is. So there you go. I mean, of course, I learned to appreciate them. And, you know, there's a lot of music that I do enjoy. And, but, you know, yeah, back then I was like, nope, that's not my thing. But I do remember taking my brother and sister to a lot of concerts because I had access, you know, just being in radio. One of my favorite ones that I went to was Digital Underground and Queen Latifah. I took my brother and sister, and then I also went with one of my best friends, you know, growing up and living in Japan. Her name was Najat, and we all went, you know, to go see the show. And then, you know, Digital Underground, this was the album Sex Packets, right? So I remember them coming out with this plastic blow up of a man's member. And I was like, oh my gosh, my mom and dad are going to kill me. Because my brother and sister were still in high school. So I was trying to cover their eyes. And they were both like, Lisa, really? It's too late for that. But it was also funny because this was also during the time when Tupac, remember these days, before he became a solo artist, he was with Digital Underground as a dancer. So, you know, we were out in the lobby hanging out. This was after the Queen Latifah part of the show. And my girlfriend, Najat, amazingly gorgeous girl, woman. Her dad was from Egypt. Her mom was from Africa. You know, she was born and raised in Melbourne, Australia. She was just absolutely beautiful. And, you know, kind of small in a small package, but still gorgeous. You know, had a very curvy, lovely, you know, she was just amazing, eye-catching for sure. And so we're just kind of talking. And then all of a sudden, a guy comes up to us in our circle and starts talking to Najat, right? It's this, you know, brother man. He's like, hey, girl, you know, I was wondering if I could get your number, right? And Najat looked at him. I kid you not. I was dying. She looked at him and she's like, sorry, honey, you came up to the wrong girl. I'm the only girl in this room who likes white men. And me, my brother, and my sister were like, oh my gosh, what's happening right now? What is that? Well, turns out that was Tupac Shakur. And I remember even, unfortunately, Najat passed away a few years ago. Rest in peace. I love her forever. But I remember we would always get together, you know, even when I moved to the States, I would go and I would visit her all the time. She's like a sister to me, you know, and we'd be talking about it. And I would say, Najat, you're the only one that rejected Tupac. Think about that. That's a pretty, pretty amazing thing. And we would just laugh about it. But, you know, who would have ever known? Yeah. But I went to see a lot of like Digital Underground and also a lot of house music. I would just see Kathy Dennis, CNC Music Factory. There was all this great stuff that was like club music that was coming out to Japan. And then of course, you know, on the flip side, George Clinton and the whole P-Funk days, Bootsy Collins, I saw them. I saw D-Light. Oh, it was just amazing. And through radio though, I did really develop a very strong appreciation for all genres of music. J-Wave was not a radio station where they would only play a certain genre. So, you know, on a radio program, you might have Beyonce, and then right after that, you'll have a Metallica, and then after that, you'll have jazz, Boney James, or something like that. You know, very eclectic, really wonderful. To this day, is still my favorite style of listening to music. I love mixing up all the genres, and you know, I think that I just think it's great, and it kind of adds a little flavor that way, but. During this time as well, I used to go and sometimes DJ at clubs because what my next door neighbor, who I have to have on a future podcast episode at some point, he's incredible, Raymond, but he would have these parties or events at clubs and, you know, he would always bring me in to do some DJing. I don't do club DJing as in mixing or anything. So it would literally be, you know, play one record and then kind of wait till the end of the record towards the end, not at the end, you know, so it wasn't that bad, but I kind of mix it a little bit into the next, you know, song. But I knew what everyone liked and I knew what made everyone, you know, move and get them excited. And so that was just a lot of fun. I loved vibing with people, with music. And, you know, to this day, I still do, you know, when I go see live shows and whatnot. Another very important time, I think, for me musically would be two places that I went to, and this was in the 90s, going into the early 2000s. I went to a club called Vietti's, super small club. It was on the fourth floor of a building in an area called Roppongi, which is like the, you know, red district. And I would sometimes go there two or three times a week. Wednesday night would be R&B night or hip hop night or whatever, you know, and all the DJs I knew there. So sometimes I would just go show up by myself and listen to the music, because here's the thing, like, you know, people would always say, what? You go by yourself? I'm like, yeah, you know, as a DJ, you're always playing music for others, for the enjoyment of others, or someone else is picking your music, you know? And so even if I do play some of the stuff I want to hear on a radio show, obviously it's not going to be everything. And I don't really get a time to enjoy it because I'm thinking about what I have to do next for my radio show. So for me, Vietti's was such a treat because I got to hear, like, say, for instance, and this one I remember so well, when Janet Jackson Got Till It's Gone, when that came out, I was absolutely obsessed with that song because it was a whole new sound that we were getting from Janet. You know, it was a very new vibe, very new Janet, really. I mean, the album cover, everything was just very different from what we were used to getting from her. And so I remember hearing Got Till It's Gone and thinking, oh, I can't wait to go to Vietti's to listen to this on the big speakers. And so, you know, I did that next Wednesday. I went to the club. But what was really interesting for me was that it was brand new. So people didn't really know about it yet. And you know, it doesn't sound like a typical Janet Jackson sound. So a lot of people that were at the club when I was there, and it was a full club, they had no idea that this was Janet. And so they were like, I don't know this song. So they would like leave the dance floor. Meanwhile, I was in heaven. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm hearing this here. Yes. So I got to listen to all kinds of great music through Vietti's, and, you know, I also got to meet some great people, through Vietti's. So I will definitely be doing a chapter, episode about that at some point. But, you know, you'd also see a very eclectic mix because you see some of the guys from the basses came out, and then there'd be a lot of, you know, Japanese coming out, like the foreign community, business people. But then you'd also get people like Snoop Dogg waltzing in, or Warren G, or, like, you know, even the sumo wrestlers. There was always a couple sumo wrestlers that loved R&B hip hop. So they would come out to Vietti's on Wednesdays. And it was just kind of our thing. And then a lot of the guys that were playing basketball or doing other sports, you know, professional athletes, they would sometimes come out as well. So it was a really cool, almost family-like atmosphere. To this day is still one of my favorite play times, play spots, you know, in my life. But another place that I really enjoyed, and I'll have to do an episode about this as well, is Pickford's, which was a live house, very, very small. It would maybe fit 35, 50 people, I feel like. And it was downstairs, B1, and it was also in Roppongi. But this was very different. So it was live music, and they had two bands. They had a house band that was made up of amazing musicians. You know, some of them came from like working with P-Funk, you know, George Clinton or Maze, or like, you know, all these incredible artists that we know, bands, groups, you know, influences. And they moved to Japan later on in their years because they wanted to do music there. So they would, so they were really incredible musicians. So they had their set, which was usually about 30 to 40 minutes long. And then there would be a break, and then the guest band would come on. The guest band would usually be from, like, I don't know, maybe Atlanta. There was a lot of Atlanta bands. I remember that. And they were always great too. And, you know, and they did a lot of covers, but they did a lot of original stuff as well. And because this was a live venue or a live club, you'd see a lot of the incredible musicians that were in town, especially the Blue Note musicians. You know, George Duke came through. Fun fact, Bobby Brown came through, very drunk, may I add. And let me just say, he just kept saying, and this was to the guest band, because he knew some of the guys from the guest band that were playing at that time. He's like, yo, play my music. And so they had to do humping around. And I just remember him singing super drunk, so off key. It was absolutely nightmare. But, you know, I mean, yeah, these people would come out and it's really cool, you know, going back like about all these different influences and like with music, you know, I just feel that music is such a part of me and I think it's so important to, at least in my life, you know, it's really about tying people together. It can be very soothing. You can use it in so many different ways, you know. In many ways, it really is like my best friend, you know. Not trying to sound like super sad and sappy or anything, but there's some times, you know, when you're really down and out and you're just like, oh man, I've had a rough day. So for me, what I do is I put my music on and then I zone, and that always makes me feel so much better. Or if I'm trying to get really lit, you know, trying to get like really excited about something, then I will put music on, like working out or like, you know, I have a big event or a big job coming up, and so I want to get like really excited about it, then I'll put some music on that kind of goes with that mood. But yeah, music is, I would never be able to do anything without it, I don't think. So mo music, mo life, baby. That's how I roll. Yeah. Anyway, so this is my episode about mo music, mo life. And like I said, I will be keying in on some of the things that I talked about in this episode. I'll be bringing out other episodes about them. But meanwhile, I do want to thank you again for joining me on this journey of Adventures of a Blonde Geisha. I really, really appreciate your support and your love. And have a wonderful September, everyone. And live for lots of love, lots of peace. Let's stay positive. Yes, we're almost through 2022. Can you believe that? How crazy is that? Only a couple months left. But anyway, stay positive, and I will see you on the next episode. This is Liesl signing off. Bye. Sleep.